This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Special Edition Superman Man of Tomorrow.
Hey Mom, there's something in the back room. Hope it's not the creatures from above. You used to read me stories as if my dreams were boring. We all know conspiracies are dumb.
Hello, welcome to iFanboy Special Edition Superman Man of Tomorrow. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I've assembled the one man down animation brain trust, Ryan Haupt.
Hey, everybody.
Paul Montgomery couldn't make this one, which is a bummer. We know how much he loves talking about animated Superman stories. This is the latest release from the DC Universe animated original line of films that started with Superman Doomsday way back in 07. And I think this is the 39th film. I think that's right. Paul usually keeps track of that. I think it's the 39th film. We'll go with that. And there'll be spoilers for this discussion as we talk about the film that was directed by Chris Palmer, written by Tim Sheridan, and starring a whole new cast of characters because, as we talked about last time, with Apocalypse, what was it called? Apocalypse War?
Yes.
Apocalypse.
It was.
Apocalypse War, yeah.
Yeah.
They ended the shared continuity films with the end of that film, and now we're sort of in unknown territory. They haven't announced if they're going to restart a new continuity with some of these shared films. Right now, these all seem to be on their own. And this is a new adventure of a young Superman on his own, starring Darren Criss as Superman, Zachary Quinto as Lex Luthor, Alexandra Daddario as Lois Lane, Neil Flynn as Jonathan Kent, Bellamy Young as Martha Kent, Ike Amadi as Martian Manhunter, and Ryan Hurst as Lobo. Those would be the main characters, I think.
Mm-hmm. And Parasite.
Oh, right, Parasite.
Brett Dalton
as Parasite. So this is an interesting discussion, I think. I'm curious to see what you think, Ryan. We haven't talked about it yet. I was excited for this movie. I liked the trailer. I liked this featurette for the next film on the DVD, and I always try to watch those. I was excited for it. But I was all over the place on this one.
Yeah, it's a big swing, which I appreciate.
It's a big swing. It's feature length. It's 86 minutes. And I didn't know that going into it, but it became quite apparent when it hit the part that I wasn't so into. I was like, God, how long is this?
Is that Lobo?
It's an hour and a half, basically, which is crazy. It's officially a full-length animated film of Superman. And the basic story is that Clark is new in town. He is an intern at the Daily Planet, and he has a secret. He's not yet become Superman. He's just a guy who sort of flies around looking like the dude from Ex Machina, in like a hat and flying glasses and
leather cap and goggles.
Yeah, know. And he saves the day that way. And so the course of this film, he becomes Superman. And there's a very heavy sort of alien story here in which we deal with Lobo, we deal with Martian Manhunter, we deal with Parasite becoming Parasite because of an alien intervention. So it becomes a little bit about acceptance of people from outside of your planet and or outside of your world. So there's that sort of story going on, but it's also a big rock'em sock'em superhero battle between all these characters. What did you think overall? When the movie finished, what was your thought?
I think I liked it. Mm-hmm. I felt good about this one. I know it's a story that's been told over and over again, but I don't know. I'm just a sucker for the Superman origin story. Yeah. I love the young, naive farm boy moving to the big city, meeting Lois, learning about the Daily Planet gang, encountering Lex for the first time. I also I like whenever a story finds a new way to spin sort of how Clark learns about his heritage. I think that there's a lot of different ways to do that. And I don't have even in my own mind, like one set in continuity way of like, this is definitely how Clark learned of his Kryptonian heritage and culture and lineage. Like, I like that there's ways to riff on it, either with having other characters who have some extra knowledge or, you know, some sort of crystal storage device. Like, it's cool. Right. So I, you know, enjoy seeing a riff on that. This was an interesting direction to take a character like Parasite. They essentially make him a kaiju by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
I went back and forth in the animation style. I really liked the designs. The style itself was a little stiff.
I've been doing the show since 2007. I don't remember when you joined on, but we've been doing this for a long time. That being said, we aren't experts in animation production, even though for my one of my old day jobs, I almost became an expert in it, but didn't end up happening. So I think from my rudimentary knowledge that this was done in Flash animation as opposed to...
Yeah, it has that look.
And so it's got the very thick lines around the characters, which I didn't dislike. They look kind of like comic book drawings that way. But also everyone kind of had a herky-jerky kind of motion to their movements. It wasn't really smooth a lot of the time. It's a style that's much cheaper than the traditional way of animation, so that I don't know if that's a factor or not. So as a result, it looked kind of cheaper, which is interesting because it was a full-length film. I didn't mind the visual look, I just didn't like how it affected the movement of the characters and the action. It didn't always happen that way, but it did happen a lot, where they sort of move very stiffly or in one piece at a time. And so there's that. I'm sure there's people who hated the way it looked, and I can't really argue with that because it is what it is. You either like the way Flash looks or you don't. I was really into like the first half, which is funny because I traditionally hate Lobo.
You do. That's true.
I really liked the first half. I liked the whole beginning with Clark in town. I liked, you know, the Lex scene, even though it was kind of sadly hysterical, that recording of Lex saying something would bring him down in this day and age.
By a grad student, no less. Yeah. A lot of grad student power in this in this universe.
In this day and age, Lex would just say, oh, that's been doctored with and that'd be fine. And then they would blow over. But I like that bit. Lobo comes. They have a fun fight. I like the arc of Clark becoming Superman through Lois's influence plus his mom's. I love the introduction of Martian Manhunter. I liked the origin of Parasite. I liked the beginning bit of Parasite when he was sort of humanoid. And then basically once he became a monster, that's when I started losing interest. For spending an hour pounding on a mindless creature, it's just not that interesting to me. You know, there's like a progression. So in the beginning, he's not quite the person in the comics. He's sort of like an amplified human with like, you know, his veins are turning purple. Like it looked good. And then the middle section was like him as like a...
almost like a xenomorph.
Yeah, it's like every creature designed from sci-fi movies now. Like he's like, they look like the alien from Signs. Like it's like every alien design looks like that. Like the elongated...
they love, you know, doing limbs, the chicken legs. Yeah.
The chicken legs and then like the big chomping, you know, flat head. And she's like, oh, this is a really boring design. I don't like this
at
all.
People always call it reverse knee, but that's not what it is. But I'm we don't have time.
And then at the end, it becomes basically Godzilla. And it was just like...
yeah, kaiju.
And that's when the movie started to feel long to me. I was like, oh God, they're still pounding on this giant parasite. The wrinkle here, and I don't know if this is from the comics, I don't recall ever having read this before, was that traditionally Parasite touches you and sucks up your life force. That's how he powers himself. You know, that's why he's Parasite. But here he also took your powers, like Rogue, and your memories and thoughts. So when he touched Superman, he basically became Superman with Superman's powers, and Superman lost his powers. And I didn't love that bit. When it was Superman, it was Lois, and it was Lex, and it was Martian Manhunter, when it was a little bit of Parasite, and it was the Kent family. Like, I loved all that. I thought that was really fun and engaging. And it's just, like, the last bit, that was just, like, endless pounding on a giant Godzilla parasite from Lobo and from Clark and from Martian Manhunter and then Lex Luthor getting involved. I just didn't find that as interesting.
What did you think of super hipster Lois?
She was fine as a young, you know, like...
I liked it.
I liked her character. Yeah. Like if you took this group and you sort of went forward with this as a continuity, I'd be fine with it. Like, I like this dynamic. I thought that cast was really great.
Yeah, I agree.
I didn't think there was a bad voice in the cast. Zachary Quinto was a little bit underused as Lex because Lex wasn't a huge part of the story, but I thought he was a great Lex. I thought Darren Criss was a really strong, young Clark.
I was looking forward to Neil Flynn, and he did not disappoint.
Neil Flynn was great. Jonathan Kent and his wife Bellamy Young was great. They were great characters in the little time they had. Ike Amadi was a great Martian Manhunter. Alexander Daddario was a great Lois Lane. Brett Dalton was good as Parasite. I liked Ryan Hurst from The Walking Dead as Lobo. He was really good from a voice character perspective. I thought it all worked. I thought all the elements worked. It just ended up just I get kind of bored at the end. Once Parasite showed up as Godzilla size, I was like, oh, I don't really care about this anymore. So it was a bummer because I was really into the first hour. I was like, oh, this is, or first however long it was, I wasn't paying attention.
The final boss battle, I didn't really understand the mechanics of what, like it was set up in such a way where I wasn't quite sure what the plan even was. Like, because Lex is like, don't worry, I've got a plan. But then we never find out what that plan was other than Lex double crosses Superman. And I'm like, okay, well, could have seen that coming.
Right.
And then we get an almost Chernobyl, which seems like could have been easily prevented by just keeping the power plant staffed.
Was it Superman's idea not to turn the power plant off? Somebody's was like...
I got a little confused, admittedly. But
didn't Lex say turn the power plant off? Superman was like, no, don't. And then I was like, well, that was weird. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah.
That's when the movie started to feel long to me. It was a really fun Superman Metropolis world that they were
in. That was one thing I wanted to touch on, was this is like futuristic Metropolis, even by futuristic Metropolis standards. Yeah. I felt like it was the city itself. I'm like, if you told me this was Kandor on Krypton, I would believe it, because it was so high, it was so futuristic, so kind of retro modern, or what's that architectural style that the Chrysler Building is?
Art Deco.
It was super deco, but it was also like the city itself looked crazy spread out. I mean, it looks like there are skyscrapers going on 4 miles,
right?
But still, like a lot of open, very utopia style green spaces as well. So it looks like a pleasant city to live in, even though I'm not necessarily a super hardcore city person. I also really like it whenever shows and animators stick to their guns and just make Kansas as flat as hell. I remember in like Smallville, because, you know, I guess they were up in Canada or something, there's always like mountains in the background, and I'm like, that's not the Kansas I've ever been to.
Did you think that they had killed off the Martian Manhunter halfway through?
Yes, I did. Because there was no, I mean, you know, he catches on fire. There's no reason to, there's no hint that it's a fake out.
I did too, and I know, I'm sure most people didn't, but there's no rules of these films. You could theoretically kill off the Martian Manhunter halfway through this movie to raise the stakes, and it was brutal.
Yeah, that was a tough scene.
I did like eyebrow raised, head turned back to the side, like watching it on the side of my eye. I was like, oh shit, him getting roasted by Parasite with Superman's heat vision was rough. I love Martian Manhunter, and I think this was a great version of it, even if I didn't necessarily think it needed all of those costume blingy elements, but it was enough close to the original look that I'm okay with it. I missed the original head. I loved that head with the giant protruding brows, but now they all give him that alien side head thing. But all in all, I liked him a lot in this film.
I love Martian Manhunter too. Such a weird character. First of all, I thought it was hilarious when like they're finally introduced and Clark says, are you another bounty hunter? And he goes, no. And I'm like, wait, shouldn't you at that next say, I'm a man hunter? Also, it's just to me, you know, I know I tend to look at things through my science lens, but it's so weird that like, the species on the next planet over to us evolved to look completely different, and then this species from a completely different part of the galaxy looks exactly human.
Listen, you go back to the Silver Age and tell these guys in the 60s that they're all wrong.
I mean, I would try, but I think that would be a pretty wasteful use of time travel.
I have this one-time use travel device. I will be using it to go back in time and fixing comic book science.
Please make
betrayal.
Kryptonians look more like Martians and Martians look more like Kryptonians.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. I'll be taking questions.
Also, what is Martian vision? Clearly not exactly heat vision. Not quite sure what it is.
Yeah, I just love him, though.
Oh, he's great. He's great.
And they give him a little bit of an edge. You know, like he shows up at Smallville and he, you know, invades Pa Kent's brain and, you know, to create that psychic link. And I like that it sort of stuck with Pa Kent. Like he's like, I'm okay with you, but don't ever do that to me again.
Yeah.
I like that. I thought Tim Sheridan's script was good. I thought, again, like the first however long, we'll say 45 minutes, but I'm totally making a number up. I was like, damn, this is really good. And then
the scene of him trying to tie his tie in his apartment with his parents on FaceTime, that was cute. Like they're like fumbling around with the phone. They can't get the orientation right. Like that's definitely.
He sees Lois likes the idea of a cape, which I guess that was a picture of Batman. It was hard to tell.
Yeah, it was. I went back and double checked that because I was like, wait, it was a blink and you miss it sort of thing. But yeah.
And Martha mentions Batman too when she's designing the costume, which is interesting. It puts Batman ahead of Superman in terms of showing up in the world. I like them, you know, trying to figure out his costume just to the extent of putting a red sheet around his shoulders because, you know, Lois likes the costume. And I like turning the tables on her. Her whole thing is she subverts the power dynamic between her and powerful men, which is great. And then, but because Clark knows it, he doesn't let her do it with Superman, which was a fun little dynamic for their relationship.
Which I think totally, they did a couple of really smart things. One, when he's, you know, depowered a little bit from the parasite attack, so he's like physically injured. So Lois sees Clark injured, which I think helps Because, you know, part of it is, like, if you're going to modernize it and set it up in a world where everyone's got smartphones and cameras and stuff, the love triangle between Clark, Lois, and Superman is a little sillier, and it's already pretty silly. But if you set it up in such a way that she's seen Clark injured and this version of Superman, like, he does a good job of acting very different as Superman than he does as Clark. And so I like some of those touches that, to me, just fleshed out that relationship and made the idea that, like, Lois would be really into Superman and kind of forget about Clark make sense.
Well, of course she'd be into Superman. You know, who wouldn't be after seeing him fly around naked for the first
time? He did fly around naked in his Lobo fight. That was a choice.
It's like, oh. Because I saw, you know, the opening, it tells you the rating and tells you what's coming. And it was like partial nudity. And I was like, really? And then there's a part where Clark's clothes get blown off in the fight. Lobo is fighting him naked. And I was like, well, that's interesting. That is a way to go. I mean, yeah, it's a mixed bag for me.
Mixed bag, but I mostly liked it.
Yeah, but I finished up thinking, that's a bummer. I don't know if I even ever watch it again. You know, I could maybe watch the beginning because I really did love that setup. And I'd love to see more Superman-type stories in that world. I think Perry's portrayal was great. It was just a really fun, funny newsroom. Ron Troop was good in a little bit he was in. It was just really fun until it got kind of, I don't want to say boring, but kind of rote with the big monster fight in the water. It just looked so much like Godzilla to me. What did you think of Lobo?
I still don't like Lobo. I knew Lobo was in this movie, but I was legitimately surprised when Lobo appeared because, you know, like, there's this scene where, like, suddenly all the news cameras are like, oh my God, something's approaching Earth, you know, it's approaching our atmosphere. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be, you know, he's going to have to fight off some asteroid or something. He's just some sort of classic Superman averting a natural disaster, which there is not. All right, I'm going to sidebar.
Yeah.
There is not enough Superman stories of him averting natural disasters anymore. Got to get back to him changing the course of mighty rivers and, like, plugging dams. I love, those are some of my favorite Superman stories. It doesn't always have to be fighting a villain. He can be fighting against nature. Nature is powerful. It's cool to see him try to figure out how to deal with problems much bigger than himself.
Right.
The end. So when I was expecting something else, because there's no way, I mean, I guess their science is much, much better, but there's no way we would detect something the size of Lobo and his bike coming up close to the atmosphere. We might notice it in the data months after the fact and be like, wow, good thing that didn't hit us. It could have been bad.
You don't know what Star Labs has on hand. They have ultra-sensitive sensors.
Yeah, but the fact that it was on the news, like, breaking news story. Like, how many, you know, I guess we live in a time when there are breaking news stories coming out of labs because of the coronavirus, but, like, yeah, that's just not the way that the science information trickles out to the public. So I thought that was a little silly. This movie did not change my opinion of Lobo. I still don't like Lobo and think he's kind of dumb, and the whole shtick of the overly macho, overly aggressive biker dude, I just don't have any fondness for. His whole thing of, like, I'm the last Axiom because I killed all the rest of them. I'm like, all right, well, that's not something to be proud of.
If you're going to use him, this was probably the best use of him for me. He's not really the main person.
Oh, he is the main man.
He's not the main antagonist in the story. You know, he's sort of part of this weird alien triumvirate. He helps save the day. There's sort of a detente with him and Superman, and he leaves. Like, it's just like, if you're going to use Lobo, this is the way to do it for me. I'll often complain about characters in comics in our regular show, but, like, there's only a handful that I really truly dislike, and he's one of them. For whatever reason, they like using Lobo. They used Lobo in the original Superman the Animated Series.
Wasn't he on the Krypton TV show?
He was, I think. I stopped watching that, but I'm pretty sure he was, yes. They just like him. I don't know why. They just do. I just don't care for him. But again, if you're going to use him, this was fine.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of these are three individuals who are
very different.
Each very different, but each the last member of their species, theoretically.
Right.
Lobo kind of drops some hints that there might be other Martians and other Kryptonians out there, which, of course, we know there are.
Right.
Yeah. I can't expect we're ever going to see a direct sequel to this,
no.
though. Didn't have that feeling to me.
No, and I don't know if they're heading to doing that again, where they have, you know, part of the line is sequelized, but for now, at least, that doesn't seem to be indicating that. I mean, listen, if it sells like gangbusters, they'll do it, but probably not.
Also, I think it's important to mention the wonderful beard that the train engineer the rail has. That was just an excellent, very excellent beard. I was like, man, this guy should be a superhero with a beard like that.
I'm still waiting for the animated Superman movie with a beard. Maybe I'll get it one day. So this was interesting because we had recently the return of the Showcase shorts to these films, but this was the first one in a while that hasn't had a short because they're done, you know, attaching them to the films. And now the next one that's going to come out is this, the Death in the Family one, that's going to be anchoring the collection of all the shorts they've done recently, much like the Superman Shazam Adventure short that they anchored the original collection of the shorts. So there was no short to talk about for this disc. I watched part of the featurette on the next film, and I had to stop because, A, they've been giving away a lot of story information on these featurettes. So I haven't been watching them all the way to completion, but B, like, it was just so hokey. The production of it was just super hokey, and it was annoying me. But
wait, what is it?
So here's what we know.
For people if this is your first Anime Brain Trust episode, I get these movies digitally because I admit to myself that I'm probably never going to watch them again. Connor gets the discs because he has this dream in his heart that he's going to rewatch these someday.
And I watch some of them, but I just want to support the line. I want to continue. So we had announcements at DC Fandom about the next year of these films, and it looks like we might get 4 or 5 releases. When is Death in the Family coming out? That is this year. So we'll have Batman Death in the Family, which is the interactive short, that comes out this year in December. And then
that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so we'll be back to talk about that one. But then next year, we have the next film, which is Batman Soul of the Dragon, which is the return of Bruce Timm. You know, Bruce Timm used to run the whole line. He left. He comes back for selected films that interest him. This is his next film, and it's basically set, or it's inspired by the 70s. He talked in the feature about how, like, it's his favorite time of his life, this, you know, the early 70s and the music and the fashion. And then, you know, he was big in the Kung Fu movies, which were big in the early 70s. So this is basically Batman as ensemble Kung Fu film starring a bunch of those 70s Kung Fu characters, including Lady Shiva and Richard Dragon and Bronze Tiger. So it's they said it's almost like a straight ensemble where you're following a bunch of these characters around. It looks cool. At one point, Batman's got shaggy 70s hair, and it's a young Batman. So it looks, the animation looks cool. The character lineup's interesting. It's really outside of the framework of these films. So it'll probably be fun. I'm hoping it'll be fun. It'll just be interesting to watch and talk about.
I'm looking forward to the interactive Death in the Family. I mean, that's not my, you know, favorite Batman story out there, but I'm really intrigued to see how they incorporate the sort of choose-your-own-adventure elements.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they already did Death in the Family in the opening of Red Hood, but we'll see.
I mean, Death in the Family was also one of the ultimate choose-your-own-adventure moments in publishing because they let the callers choose what happened. So it kind of makes sense to migrate it to that format digitally. I'm intrigued.
So then after Soul of the Dragon in early 2021, I guess mid to early 2021, you're going to get Justice Society : World War II. And we know nothing else about that other than it's a Justice Society animated film, which kind of blew all of our minds when we heard about it. So that's something to look forward to. We're all big Justice Society fans here.
Oh, heck yeah.
So that'll be fun, hopefully. And then the end of the year, the two-part Batman The Long Halloween film. We had the two-part Batman The Dark Knight Returns adaptation and the two-part Death of Superman adaptations now. We're getting Batman The Long Halloween, which will be interesting because it's mostly a mystery. It's a murder mystery. It's not really like a big action adventure story, although there is action in it.
And also, we didn't love Hush, which is also sort of a more mystery focused.
Yeah, and Batman The Long Halloween is a seminal favorite for a lot of people. It's not one of my favorite Batman stories. I like it fine. I own the Absolute Edition. I enjoyed reading it when it came out, but I don't put it in my top 10 Batman stories of all time. But it doesn't mean it's not a good story. It's just, it's very popular amongst a lot of Batman fans. It's like a top 5 story.
Tim Sale was one of my favorite artists when I was getting back into comics in college. His stuff really blew me away, and I don't know that I've seen him do much recently, but, you know, I'm always curious to what degree they will try to adapt the artist's style into the animation, which I think it can work really well, and I think it can work not so well, and that'll be something I'll be curious to see.
So those are the 5 releases we know about between now and the end of next year. Batman, Death in the Family, Batman, Soul of the Dragon. What was that? Son of the Dragon? I forgot. Something of the Dragon. Justice Society, and then the two-part Long Halloween. So yeah, so that's 5 animated releases on this line of the next year. So it's not slowing down. Then again, none of those films are in sort of a shared world. So I guess we're just moving forward and seeing what happens.
You don't think Justice Society might set something up?
Listen, it's certainly possible.
No, you listen, Connor.
Also, clearly, with all the upheaval at Warner Brothers, who knows what's going on? I think we're just happy that these films are coming out. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But there's a lot to talk about in the future, including our weekly show, which we talk about the weekly comics. But before we get to that wrap-up point, let's talk about this film.
Ratings.
Out of 5 stars. I'm just going to give it...
Ratings.
3 stars. I really loved the first half. I really didn't like the second half. I think it averages out to a 3.
I was debating between a 3.5 or a 3.75. Mm-hmm. I think I think I like it a little more after our discussion, so I think I'm going to go 3.75.
All right, there you go. So there's your Superman Man of Tomorrow discussion. If you want to talk about the film, you can go to fanboy.com. There'll be a post for this show. You can talk about it there. Or in the any myriad of ways you guys contact us through social media or our patron groups and our Discord server and our patron Facebook group. Everyone, it's no longer all centered around the website. It's all over the internet now. You can tell us what you thought of this film, and we're happy to hear what you think. And then we'll be back for the next one, which is said Death in the Family in October. The Branchest will return. And until then, I am Connor.
And I'm Ryan. Now, Connor, can we just go ahead and talk about Chernobyl for a while?
Sure.
Power plant scene got me thinking about how great that show was.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.